Hi, this is Rachel McElroy.
What's up? It's Griffin McElroy.
And this is wonderful.
Sitting backwards in my chair, how casual this is. How casual am I right now with my backwards chair? Pretty good. So, we should address the elephant in the room.
Hello, elephant.
Okay, that's good. We got a new sort of member of the studio staff here at Wonderful Industries. From the makers of New Lamp and
New Chair,
Brother Printer, and the Target Chair, we have Exercise Bike. Welcome, Exercise Bike. Here to get sort of the show's motivation game on track. And folks, don't worry, it's a Schwinn.
I have my back to Exercise Bike right now, and I feel rude.
Yeah, you are sort of shutting Exercise Bike out of the conversation. Exercise Bike, what do you think is wonderful this week?
New sweatbands.
Took me a while to think of something that Exercise Bike would be into.
Which shows how devoted we are to exercise.
I've ridden it once for 10 minutes, but that's okay. I'll get there. And did I mention it's a Schwinn?
Is that a thing?
Have you seen that commercial where, like, the guy is like, he buys the woman an exercise bike and she's telling all her friends, like, don't worry, it's a Schwinn.
I don't
remember. I'm thinking this. Of the Jared commercials.
I thought maybe, yeah.
So do you have any small wonders this week?
I do.
Okay. Oh, you've written them down. Well, small wonders are usually so like scat. They're so scat jazz.
Oh, I knew I would forget. The holiday episodes of Nailed It.
Those have been very, very fun so far. We watched, what, three? But we watched them in a row, as you are wont to do with Netflix programming sometimes.
Yeah. It's nice. It, like, you know, we're always looking for new stuff this time of year to get us in the spirit.
It's doing it.
And yeah, it's really working.
Weirdly, it's the thing that's doing it. Also, just sort of the extreme bounty of Great British Baking Show that we have gotten.
Yes.
I feel like Netflix like deployed like five different sort of chunks of baking show greatness.
We tore through the new season and the holiday episodes.
Yeah. Yeah. God, that was good stuff. Just started watching Final Table. It's not sort of giving me the same sort of feel good feeling. It's a little more cutthroat, but you know, need a little bit of that too. A little spice in the sugar. You know how they say you should always put a little bit of chili powder in your sugar when you store it? Our fireplace. We got our fireplace fixed up and just lit it for the first time today. And holy crap, is it cozy as heck, y'all.
It's real nice.
I think I go first this week.
Yes.
My first thing is the Aurora Borealis. The Aurora Borealis, at this time of day, at this time of year, localized entirely within your kitchen.
You know? Already did steamed hams. You're just talking in general?
Yes. Okay. Can I see it? No. No, the literal Aurora Borealis.
Okay.
I want to talk about that, the phenomenon known as the Aurora Borealis. How much you know about the Borealis?
Very, very little.
How much you know about David Boreanaz?
Oh, way more.
It's funny. They're both caused by solar flares bouncing off of the Earth's electromagnetic field.
Both have strong brows.
Both have strong brows and appear mostly around the Earth's poles. No, I've always thought the Aurora Borealis is super pretty. I've always wanted to see it. When we were up in Minneapolis, our friend, far northern Minnesota, our friend said, hey, while we're up there, we may see the northern lights. And I was like, oh, fuck yeah. I got so stoked. Didn't happen for us.
Is it the same? Okay, I was going to ask you the question. Are the northern lights the same thing as Aurora Borealis?
Yeah, so Aurora Borealis is commonly sort of known as the Northern Lights. However, there is also a Southern Lights. I learned a lot about Aurora Borealis today. It is probably the most I've ever learned about a topic that I've like been researching for Wonderful, and it's very, very exciting. I mean, the term Aurora Borealis is great. It's very phonetically pleasing. Can I tell you all about Aurora Australis, which is the Southern Lights?
Whoa.
It's very cool. So Earth isn't also the only planet that has like a Borealis effect, actually an aurora is what it's called. Jupiter has one, Saturn has one, Uranus can also have it. So what causes it is super neat. Solar flares come out of the sun, right? The sun is like doing this nuclear fusions, creating all this energy. And sometimes it toots it out. And that's a very, very rudimentary way of explaining it. But they let out this powerful toot that is made up of these super energized particles. They shoot that at Earth. Earth would be destroyed by this mm-hmm. exhalation. When it reaches us, it's scattered and dispersed. It's called a solar wind at that point. If that hit Earth without any sort of protection, that would be pretty much ball game, Earth, mm-hmm. game, set, match, sun. Sun wins this round. But we got this electromagnetic field. It's surrounding our Earth. The solar wind hits it. It disperses all around the Earth. And we live to fight another day to keep recording podcasts for our friends at home. But there's two places where the electromagnetic field is the weakest, okay. and that's at the poles of the Earth, the North Pole and the Southern Pole. So that is why in the Arctic and Antarctic is why that is where you usually see the Aurora Borealis or Australis. Now, it can happen anywhere in the world. I guess like if like the solar wind is strong enough, or maybe the electromagnetic field isn't feeling it that day, it can hypothetically happen anywhere. It's extraordinarily rare for it to happen, you know, too far south. But mm-hmm. famously, the Aurora Borealis once appeared in Honolulu, mm-hmm. which is pretty far down south from the Arctic.
This adds some depth to the steamed hams bit.
Yes, absolutely.
Because it could have possibly been in his kitchen that day.
The whole phenomenon kind of works kind of like how like neon signs work. Basically, the solar wind brings all of this super energized like particles into the atmosphere, and then it hits when it pierces in through the poles, it hits the oxygen and the nitrogen in the atmosphere, and those get like supercharged with energy, and as they like shoot electrons out to try to, you know, normalize, that is what sort of creates the effect. And depending on like what the mix is of the elements in the atmosphere that are affected, that sort of determines what the color is.
Going to ask about the colors.
The shapes are like very specific, right? Because it moves in like streams almost. The mm-hmm. streams are, you know, strips of color and light. What causes the shape of it is literally you are seeing the shape of the effect of the electromagnetic field. It is like you are sort of like rippling a sheet and pouring sand on it, and all we see is the sand, but you can see through the sand like what the shape of the sheet is underneath it. I think that's fucking radical, because I can't stress this enough. The electromagnetic field is essential for Earth's like whole thing that we're trying to go for down here. And occasionally, the right parts of the world, when the right sort of ingredients from the sun, the powerful sun toot hits us in just the right way, you can see it. Like, you can see this thing that keeps us all sort of, keeps us all safe and cozy in here.
So it could feasibly happen during the day. We just wouldn't be able to see it.
I don't think you'd be able to see it. I mean, yeah. I mean, the it's not like the sun waits until it's nighttime. Actually, it takes about 2 days for the solar wind to reach us from the sun anyway. But yeah, I guess it just doesn't. I don't know that actually. I don't know if it would show up during the day. But I think it's really fascinating. I also think it's like the prettiest thing Earth does. Like, I feel like sunrises and sunsets like went at it for a while, and then rainbows were like, well, what about me? And then double rainbow, and you remember that rainbow meme? But then Aurora Borealis, I think, has just beaten the crap out of all of them.
Yeah.
Hey, what's your first thing?
My first thing is 90s commercials.
Fuck yes! This is all time. I'm so excited. Can we, oh God. I don't want to cut you off at the pass, but like, are you going to talk about Crossfire?
Let me
see. Is Crossfire on the list?
It is on the list, yes.
Fuck yeah, all right.
But in a very small way.
Okay, well, when you say the word Crossfire, I am going to just scream sing the theme song for that. I'm going to wake up our son and the sons of all of the people living on our street. So many sons will be awoken by my Crossfire.
So I'm not a big YouTube person, but one of my favorite things to do is to watch old commercials on YouTube. I noticed that I was not alone in this when last year we tried to find Christmas commercials to watch in an act of desperation, I think.
Yes.
And so part of this you can just explain as like nostalgia.
Sure.
But part of it is kind of just the unique time period that was 90s commercials.
Yeah, there was sort of a loudness to it. There was like the 80s, we were kind of calibrating, like, how loud can we be? And the 90s, it was like, maximum!
Yeah.
It was like, oh shit, the 2000s came around, like, okay, hold on, let's rethink this.
So the other thing that I thought was interesting is you know, the presence and role of commercials has kind of lessened since everybody's watching stuff on platforms now.
Yes.
Apparently, and this is a goal that was released from Fox, the network will aim to snip the time given over to ads in each primetime hour down to a total of just 2 minutes by 2020.
For the whole hour?
Yes.
What the fuck?
Last year, ads took up over 13 minutes each hour.
Yeah.
And so they're shooting for 2 minutes by 2020.
Why? Is it just because of like the changing nature?
They're
like everybody's streaming and
yeah,
everybody's streaming and subscribing. I mean, we subscribe to Hulu Plus because I mean, I can't, we have saved literally days from not watching commercials. That's wild to me. That means like TV shows that air on Fox are going to have to change.
Exactly. Yeah. No, they're going to give more time.
Right. You can't just get away with 47 minutes worth of content. Now it's going to be 58. Mm-hmm. That's fucking wild. I can't think of actually a single Fox show that I want. You know, another 11 minutes out of, now that I think about it. But
so they talk about, you know, I read some articles, a lot of people have written books too. There was a book called The Sponsored Life: Ads, TV and American Culture that talks about how now we're now living in a post slogan era and that memes have overtaken slogans, which I thought was kind of an interesting thought.
No slogans, instead we get Logans, like Logan Paul. I'd rather have slogans any day of the week, but nobody asks me.
Who is this Andy Rooney character you're bringing?
Can we mention, the first thing I thought of when you mentioned this is our friend had a party where we watched, like, he just had 90s commercials like up on the TV, and it was impossible for me to communicate with anybody else. The reason he had it up on TV, and I can't believe we've never talked about this on the show before, because I think they came up with it, and it's such a fucking brilliant idea. It's a small wonder. I'm cutting in with an unofficial small wonder. We've done a claim to fame party
it
twice.
It was actually, Justin got that idea from his friend Scott.
Oh, it's so good. Just get all your friends together and have everybody bring like a claim to fame, like sometimes they made the local newspaper or like clips of their dance recital or something. It is, you will learn things about your friends you would never imagine. It's so good.
So another kind of cultural critic at Duke University talked about how when the cable revolution happened and we moved from three major channels to 100 overnight, the communication became super fragmented. And suddenly you had like certain types of ads appearing on certain types of channels, depending on what they were.
Wow, that's a good point. I didn't think about that either. But like channels become specialized.
So like you and I were watching Nickelodeon. We were just getting like slammed with all those toy commercials that we now love so much.
Yeah.
Yeah. Also, a lot of brands have shifted to social media to kind of promote their message.
You know,
they have many ways to get at you, which is part of the reason.
Yeah, I mean, teens today are going to think about, like, you know, the funny Arby's Twitter in the same way that I think about Crossfire.
I don't actually know that theme song.
Crossfire, you'll get caught up in the Crossfire.
Oh, I remember that now that you're doing it.
Yeah, you remember it? Have you ever played the game? That's it. I think only like 200 people in the fucking world did. My uncle Josh had it, and we played it once. And it's actually pretty fun. You shoot marbles at like a small little disc in the middle, and you try to knock it in each other's goal. It's kind of like hockey, but with guns. Crossfire!
So the nostalgia thing.
Yes.
And this is an article in Adweek from February 2018. They talk a lot about how during the Super Bowl, a lot of brands were leveraging the nostalgia for like previous commercials.
Yeah.
The article said nostalgia creates a story where the brand can be the hero. A spot that harkens back years or decades demonstrates the idea of trust while simultaneously showcasing a brand's longevity. If you can show that a brand has always been a part of culture, it shows how it's still relevant. Nostalgia is a way to do compacted storytelling, which is especially useful in the Super Bowl.
Sure, but it's not like Crossfire had built-in nostalgia when it first aired in 1996. No. It's not like they capitalized on virtually anything.
No, I'm talking more like Pepsi and Coke and like McDonald's.
Oh, yeah. I mean, how many times have they done like the share a smile with whatever the fuck?
Yeah.
And when I say that, I don't know which one of the two big brown soda companies it is that did it, but you know what I'm talking about.
Mm-hmm. So there was a study published in the Journal of Consumer Research that suggests that people spend more money when they're feeling nostalgic.
Uh-huh.
The authors conducted six experiments that looked at how much people were willing to spend, donate, and value money when feeling nostalgia evoked social connectedness.
Yeah, let's talk about my Super Nintendo game collection that I've been acquiring over the last decade.
Exactly. Yeah. Well, and one of the things I read was talking about how Nickelodeon like has capitalized that on a big way.
Oh shit. Yeah. I mean,
like
for sure.
Releasing all those like DVDs of their previous series, except for Pete and Pete.
Except for, well, Pete and Pete is out a couple seasons of it, right? It's
but
just
not the whole
one.
Collection.
Yeah. I mean, this is what Nick Gass is all about, the mm-hmm. Games and Sports Channel, which like when that dropped on my cable box when I was like 20 years old, I was like, oh shit, stop yeah. ever. I don't think I went to class that week.
I think, I mean, a lot of heat gets put on our generation, but I think if this kind of medium existed for the older generation, they would be all over it too. You know, like they don't have that experience that we had
yeah.
where our whole childhood is like a little time capsule that you can get at your fingertips all the time.
It's very like it's done to death, right? The only 90s kids. But there is a part of that where like I remember when I was like, you know, in my early teens, and that's when you first start to find out about like the time period that your parents grow up in, not find out about but like give a shit about, like learning about like what the 60s, 70s yeah. and early 80s were like. And for me, I remember hearing that shit and thinking like, well, that sounds awesome. When we landed on the moon for the first time, I bet that was pretty fucking sick, man. Yeah. I wish I was around then. Now that I'm 31, looking back, I'm pretty fucking stoked I got to be in the 90s. The 90s were such a buck wild fucking time of shit that, like, as far as I know, just kind of stopped happening December 31st, 1999. And then, like, nobody wanted to talk about it for a long time. And now we're here and we're like, actually, that was pretty tight what happened in the 90s.
So let me give you a list I got from Mashable of the best 90s ads for kids.
Yes, 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 yes.
Number one.
Oh.
Or should I go backwards?
Yeah, don't start with number one.
Okay, it goes all the way to 15. Do you want to hear all 15?
Maybe start with 10.
Okay. So 10. Well, I'll just go very quickly.
Okay.
Because I don't want to leave any of these out. Number 15, Mousetrap.
Oh, yeah. God.
Number 14, Fisher-Price Triple Arcade and Tournament Table.
Yes. Clint Wilson had one of those. It was fucking legit. Made me an athlete.
13, Stretch Armstrong.
Yeah.
12, Polly Pocket.
Yeah.
11, Soccer Boppers. You remember those?
No.
They were the big inflatable, like, punching gloves that you could put on your fists.
Oh.
And you could hit people with them.
No, we wouldn't do that in my family.
Mm. 10, Zoo Books.
Mm-hmm.
9, Super Soaker 100.
Yes.
8, Talk Boy.
Yes.
7, Skip It.
Hold on. Come down for dinner, kids. It's ready. What was it for the commercial? Do you remember?
Yes. No, you're exactly right.
Come on down, Kyle. Dinner's ready. Oh, 90s kids will remember this.
And then, okay, so the list gets confusing here because number 6 is just McDonald's.
Okay.
5 is Crossfire.
Oh, yes.
4 is Bubble Tape.
Yeah. Oh, shit. With like the weird, like painted up, like teacher lady
yeah,
who looked
the
like
animation,
an absolute ghoul.
And it was very much like,
it was very Monty Python in a way.
Well, 6 feet of bubble tape for us, not them. It was
yeah.
all like,
fuck the police. They can't have my bubble tape. It's too long for them.
3 is GAC.
Yeah. Well, wait, I don't remember so much GAC commercials.
I mean,
I remember it made rude noises.
Exactly,
I think they had some fun with
too.
That. Okay, yeah, sure.
Number 2, Mr. Bucket.
Mr. Bucket, you put the balls in my mouth. Mr. Bucket, let's spit them right back out. Yeah.
I thought this would be a fun game to play with you because the McElroys have an encyclopedic knowledge of television commercials. But here,
Mr. Bucket is like Crossfire. I'm pretty sure 150 people around the world have ever played Mr. Bucket. I am one of them. It's a pretty bad game. It's kind of chores.
Number 1 was one that I had to find on YouTube and watch
okay.
because I didn't remember it.
Gimme.
And I don't know why it's number 1.
Gimme, gimme.
Rappin' Rockin' Barbie.
No. That's a deep cut.
It's a commercial of Barbie's wearing like a little like quote unquote rap outfit.
Oh, that sounds great so far.
And these two little girls are playing and we're like hearing a rap about how cool Barbie's outfit is in that very 90s.
I see nothing wrong with this. This is great. Sure. Nothing wrong with this, Barbie.
I don't know why that's number 1.
Yeah.
I did remember it when I saw it, but again, it did not stick with me.
Gotta at least look at what it looks like. Yeah. Not ideal. okay, we're done.
Yeah, so I was glad to bring that this week because I was thinking about all the kids watch the YouTube, and I don't even know like how to find the hip YouTube celebs, but I can tell you what, I know how to find the sure. Soccer Boppers commercial.
I'm surprised that no like video game commercials made this list, because those really stand out to me. Because in the 90s, there was this trend of no matter how hardcore a game it was, like from Doom to like Ocarina of Time on N64, the theme of so many of those commercials were like, this game will literally fucking kill you, idiot. You're too big a baby to play this game, you baby. It will strip the skin from your bones, you fucking infant. And it's like, dude, it's Pilot Wings. Calm down. Hey, can I steal you away?
Hey, I've got Jumbotrons.
Hit me with that Jumbotron stick.
So this next message is for Keisha. It is from Robert. To my wonderful wife, I don't know when this message will air, so I'm going to take a wild shot and say that I'm so proud that you became the first kindergarten teacher to make $1 billion a year, and that I was able to quit my job to pet our dog full time. I hope that our robot butler is taking good care of us today. Love, your soup snake.
Drag us through the mud. Got us. I mean, it's a good point. We are very tardy on these, but robot butlers do kind of exist. What is a Roomba but a robot butler, if you think about it? And I know you're saying it's sort of relegated to just cleaning and sweeping the floors, but I will say, first of all, there's also mopping Roombas, and second of all, you can balance a drink on it.
True.
Balance a drink on it, and then
you can balance a lot of things on there. A
lot of stuff on it.
I've seen a lot of videos with cats on there.
I mean, and talk about put my nice silver platter on there with a nice china gravy boat full of champagne. Okay. Bring that right to me.
Okay. This next message is for Josiah. It is from Heather. Josiah, you are my sweet and wonderful boy. Thank you for always being there for me, never failing to make me laugh, and for putting up with our three gremlins disguised as cats, Margot, Pearl, and Tinks. You make every day truly wonderful. I love you.
Good message. Good cat names. Good love. Had a good flavor to it.
I really like the name Margot.
I do too. Was it the cat or the person? It was the cat. But I like it in either respect.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, if you like your podcast to be focused and well-researched and your podcast host to be uncharismatic, unhorny strangers who have no interest in horses, then this is not the podcast for you.
Again, what's your deal? I'm Emily.
I'm Lisa.
Our show's called Baby Geniuses.
And its hosts are horny adult idiots. We discover weird Wikipedia pages every episode.
We discuss institutional misogyny.
We ask each other the dumbest questions, and our listeners won't stop sending us pictures of their butts.
We haven't asked them to stop, but they also aren't stopping.
Join us on Baby Geniuses
every other week on MaximumFun.org.
Can I tell you about my second thing?
Yes.
Let's get the holidays going.
Okay.
It's December. Yes. I don't even think we did. Did we do holiday shit in our first episode in December? I don't think we did.
I don't
did.
Think so.
Shameful. Shame on us. The creep is coming a little late this year, I guess. But it's here and in full effect. My second thing is the Vince Guaraldi Trio's A Charlie Brown Christmas album.
Have we never talked about this?
Oh, I hope we haven't. No. God, you scared the shit out of me. It is unbelievable we haven't talked about this. This is, if we had to throw away every piece of vinyl that we own, save for one album, this may be a contender for that very album. It is definitely the one that has like gotten the most playtime on our turntable for sure, without a doubt.
Griffin, don't forget about Al Jarreau Breaking Away.
Damn it, you're right. It's the second, that's not a joke. It's the second most played. It's beautiful. It's the one we have is like a reissue. It's like translucent green. Yes. It's sick as shit.
It's lovely.
It is. It's so good. I don't think there's a lot of like overtly holiday-y stuff about it. Like obviously it's playing like, you know, pretty classic Christmas carols, and there's a few like original tracks on there as well. But really it's just like really good. Like it could be released as not a Charlie Brown Christmas, and it could still just be like a great album full of like new jazz standards, because that album is so iconic to me. Obviously it is the instrumental and very occasionally vocal accompaniment for the A Charlie Brown Christmas special, but I don't really have strong feelings about that special. I know a lot of people very much like it a lot. For me, the soundtrack sort of is the bigger, yeah, the bigger thing for sure. It's just a nice album to put on at a holiday party because it's really nice, like background music for, you know, a party, a gathering of friends of any sort, or, you know, doing dishes or any sort of cooking up a nice holiday meal in the kitchen. It's just smooth and fucking classy as heck, which is unexpected for a child's cartoon holiday special. But so I read a bit about Vince Guaraldi today, which led to me for the first time in my life actually seeing what he looked like. My dude's style is very fresh. He's got a fucking mustache you could ramp a bike off of. It is extremely good.
He doesn't look like a Peanuts character, because that's all I can picture.
He doesn't. He looks like a young man with a big mustache, a big old mustache, just a really luxurious mustache. And like I said, there's a few original songs on top of. You're Googling him right now, aren't you?
Yep.
It's mostly Christmas carols that are sort of this mix of new arrangements and a ton of piano improvisation from Vince Guaraldi.
Oh my gosh, what a big mustache.
I'm not joking about the mustache. There's also a couple of original tracks on there. So I want to play one. It's Skating, which, like, if you've ever seen the special or listened to the album, like, this one really stands out because it's super upbeat. It's a swinging 3-4 time song that, like, really kind of, like, when you listen to it, it's like, yeah, I could ice skate to this. The other big original song on the album is Christmas Time Is Here.
Yes, I know that one.
If you've never listened to this album or watched the special, it's inexplicably the sad walking away music from Arrested Development. It's just like one of my favorite running jokes on that show. There is an instrumental version on the album immediately followed by the vocal version. I may have actually switched that around. So originally, like, Guaraldi had written the music for the album and it was just instrumental. And then the studio, like, that was making the Charlie Brown Christmas, like, special, they needed a scene where kids were singing, and they hadn't written lyrics to it yet. So the story goes that Lee Mendelsohn, who was the TV producer behind that special, who actually reached out to Vince Guaraldi in the first place and is kind of responsible for their, you know, union of Vince Guaraldi being, like, the official composer for the whole, like, Charlie Brown averse. He, in a panic, wrote the lyrics to the song in 15 minutes on the back of an envelope.
Oh, my gosh.
It's very great. Good. Why don't I play a little bit of it right now? The story behind, like, the singing performance, I also think is kind of great. They wanted, you know, real kids, like you might see at a store,
a car wash or a pharmacy.
It's a children's choir from a church in San Rafael, California. And there are people who are, like, in that choir who now, like, have, like, spoken to, you know, different documentaries and people who have written books about, like, the Charlie Brown specials and been like, yeah, it was pretty tight. The kids who participated were paid $5 for their effort.
Aww.
Not great, probably, in terms of labor laws and what have you. They also would take them out for ice cream after each session.
Oh, my gosh.
So the vocals for the whole album, there's also a recording of, what's the other song that has singing on it? Oh, Hark the Herald Angels Sing also has the kids singing. So all of that was recorded over 3 sessions over the course of 2 weeks. And parents, the sessions would run, like, super long into the night. And parents of those kids were like, what do you do? Like, my kid can't stay out until midnight recording your Charlie Brown album. So they would pull them out and constantly cycle in new kids from the church. the casting crew are constantly changing. They were, the kids were directed by a guy named Barry Minia, who wanted the choir to, you know, sound perfect. It's an album and you don't want a shitty take on there. But Mendelsohn and Vince Guaraldi said that they wanted these kids to sound like kids, like on the TV special. Are you supposed to expect that, like, these professionally yeah. trained vocalists just happen to be friends with Charlie and Pigpen and the gang? No, they want them to sound like real kids. And that's why, like, especially on Hark the Herald Angels Sing, like, there's a lot of sort of flat notes in that song, but like there's an authenticity to it that's really yeah. cool. I just love this album. It guaranteed gets me in the mood, and it does so in a way that is not like at all obnoxious.
Yeah, so many Christmas albums are obnoxious,
and I love that stuff too, right? Like I'll yeah. listen to All I Want for Christmas Is You, like the OG cut, and still groove to it, but it can get grating after a while. This album I listen to constantly in the month of December, and it holds up.
I agree.
What is your second thing?
My second thing is also a holiday album.
Oh boy.
Specifically a song off of a holiday album.
Gimme.
So the album is It's a Holiday Soul Party from Sharon Jones and the Dap Kings that came out in 2015.
Oh, Sharon Jones. Mm-hmm. Sharon Jones, so good.
I didn't realize, so I did a little research on Sharon Jones because, you know, she's got like a very like deep soul voice.
Yes.
I assumed that she'd been around forever, but her first album didn't come out till 2002.
Kind of like the Charles Bradley arc.
Exactly. Yeah. Like. She released her first record when she was 40 years old.
It's so good.
I know. So in 2014, Jones was nominated for her first Grammy. And then unfortunately in 2016, she passed away from cancer. But before she did, in 2015, she released the It's a Holiday Soul Party album. And so there were 11 tracks on it and include a lot of holiday classics, like soul versions of things like White Christmas, Silent Night, Please Come Home for Christmas, Silver Bells, Little Drummer Boy, all awesome. The song I wanted to talk about is 8 Days of Hanukkah.
Hell yes.
For those of you that celebrate Hanukkah, like me, you may have grown up thinking that it was a little disappointing.
That there weren't more sort of
that there
tunes.
Weren't more Hanukkah jams. Yeah, no, I mean, yeah. It was just that Adam Sandler song and Dreidel, Dreidel, Dreidel.
Dreidel, Dreidel, Dreidel is great. And there's been a lot of great versions of yeah. Dreidel, Dreidel, Dreidel.
Yeah. 8 Days of Hanukkah blows them all away.
It's so fucking good.
Mm-hmm. So the soul group counts down the 8 days and nights with catchy verses that celebrate what's great about the holiday traditions, presents, and yummy Jewish food. So if you could play a little bit of that song.
Here we go.
8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Time to light a candle for those Maccabees who ordered burn and burn. Day 2. Time to spin a dreidel. And hope that Kimbo shows up on my turn.
So another thing I recommend is that you check out the music video for it. They use this kind of animated Schoolhouse Rock style video that makes the song also feel like from a very specific soul time period. And it teaches you a little bit about the history of Hanukkah.
Yeah, for sure.
Like there's shout outs to like the Maccabees. You get a little bit of the foods in there. It's really ideal.
I was
excited to find it. I was not aware of it until very, very recently. And it really made my day to know that there's something like that out there.
And this was not a cover, right? This was an original.
Original.
So good.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Sharon Jones was an immense talent. And this song is very, very fresh. We can only play a little bit of it, but go listen to it in its entirety. And also, happy late Hanukkah, folks who did celebrate it. We didn't shout it out in the last show. We had a nice little quiet Hanukkah. Well, Henry enjoyed the candles very much.
Yeah, it was fun. I would say, Henry, do you want to do Hanukkah? And he would say, yeah.
And he'd run over.
And then I'd light the candles. And...
As you precariously lit the skinniest candles ever, our son would yank at your pants to add a degree of challenge to it. Hey, do you want to know what our friends at home are talking about?
Yes.
Here's one from Bob who says, I love finding the stuff previous owners have used as bookmarks in used books. Plane tickets, magazine subscription cards, old coupons. I enjoy picturing the moments of the last owner's life that led to the use of that scrap of paper.
Yes, I used to love this when I spent a lot more time in used bookstores.
Mm-hmm. I wasn't a huge like reader, but my dad was obsessed with used bookstores. Every time we went to anywhere on vacation, like anytime we left the city the state lines of West Virginia, we would go to a bookstore somewhere and mm-hmm. peruse it for what felt like hours. And seeing what I could get to shake out of books was very exciting for me. Not knowledge and stories, but, you know, maybe a dollar's in there somewhere. Here's one from Hannah who says, my small wonder today is getting comfy after a fancy event. I just got home from a swanky office Christmas party and I'm flicking off my fake nails, pulling off my false eyelashes and swapping a spangly dress for a flannel onesie. It's a delicious feeling.
That is so good.
Yeah, I mean,
getting out of those shoes.
Oh, the shoes, gross. Yeah, it's very nice. I don't know. I'm trying to remember. Yeah, it feels nice. I haven't worn like formal wear. I don't think I wore formal wear this year. I don't think I put a suit jacket on this year.
I can't. Yeah, because all of our friends that were going to get married seem to have gotten married.
I just did it.
And so now we don't really have an occasion very often.
Yeah.
I'm okay with that.
Me too. Here's one from Mitch who says, a subtle but wonderful thing I found this week is restroom locks that indicate vacant/occupied. These are becoming increasingly popular at restaurants and bars and are wonderful because they remove the dreaded knock and response routine usually required to determine a toilet's occupancy. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, this is Griffin's wheelhouse.
You know
right
what's
here.
The opposite of this is just the handle button locks. It's not even like a deadbolt. It's like the button like on the handle to the doorknob. I don't fucking trust those things as far as I can throw them.
Well, you always have to test it to make sure it really works.
And then you seem like you're worried there's going to be somebody outside who's like, there's somebody trapped in the bathroom. And then they kick the door down and they see your butt.
How? Oh, never mind.
You don't know how I go. I perch up on the tank like an albatross. Like an albatross keeping a ship safe. I perch up on the tank backwards.
Gargoyle would be a good.
I sit on the toilet backwards like a cool teacher, like I've been doing this whole time.
What a fun way to potty train Henry. We should really think about that.
He walks into the bathroom and sees me sitting backwards on the toilet like a cool teacher. Hey, son, it's time. Come over here. This is the lever. It makes it go flushy flush. So that's our show. Thank you to Bowen and Augustus for the use of our theme song, Money Won't Pay. You can find a link to that in the episode description. What else?
Thank you to MaximumFun.org for hosting our show.
Yeah.
You know what I listened to this week? The Flophouse has a new episode and they are talking about a Christmas movie that I was not familiar with. And it was very, very funny.
What was the movie? You do not remember?
Do not remember.
Well, I'm sure it was a good episode regardless. Thank you to you all for listening. Oh, we have a new website that has all of our stuff on it. I don't think we talked about this last week because it just launched. It is McElroy.family or themacelroy.family. All of the stuff that we make is going to be on there.
There's a Monster Factory up there.
There's a new Monster Factory. We're going to be doing those, I think, on a monthly schedule for the rest of time, which is exciting. It's also just the place to go. We're going to be putting like our news and announcements and new merch and stuff. We're partnered up with Vox on that website, which was my former employer at Polygon. They know how to make a fucking good website. So we teamed up with them and made one. So I hope you will check it out. There's a whole wonderful page on there.
And thank you to those of you that obviously heard our most recent promo and went into iTunes and left positive reviews that said Amber is the color of our energy.
Oh, good. Thank you.
There are at least a dozen.
Thank you. I think that's it. What do you say we just sort of close it out with a little bit of our own little like improvised holiday jazz?
Yes, yes, yes.
So what song do you want to like vamp over an existing song or should we just make up our own?
We
could do like Silent Night. Like I've always wanted to hear what a jazz version of Silent Night would sound like. So do you want me to? I'll just sing like I'll do the melody of Silent Night as it traditionally is.
Okay, that's
what they do in the Vince Guaraldi stuff. Like they'll play like, you know, here's what O Tannenbaum sounds like, but then he'll come in like, yeah. So I'm going to just sing Silent Night and you just jazz on me.
Okay, yeah.
Do you get it? I'll sing it. You jazz right on me.
Yeah, okay.
Silent Night.
Silent Night.
Holy Night.
Oh, the holy, holy night.
I thought it would be more instrumental. Here, why don't you give it to me and I'll jazz on you.
That expression is terrible.
It's so good.
Let's just try it again with you.
Okay. Silent night. That's not really improvising as much as it's that one song.
Okay, I got it. Do it again. Do it again.
You're just doing a deconstruction of that. We're done. Bye.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Listener supported.
I'm Bailiff Jesse Thorne.
And I'm Judge John Hodgman.
If you live on the west coast of North America, we're coming your way.
That's right. Judge John Hodgman is taking justice to the west coast on tour. Starting where?
Vancouver, British Columbia, January 15th, then to Seattle, Washington on the 16th, Portland, Oregon on the 17th, San Francisco, California on the 18th, and Los Angeles, California, the City of Angels, on January 22nd. Tickets are on sale now. You can find links to all of the shows at MaximumFun.org. And if you're going to be in one of those cities and you have a dispute we can try on stage, send it to us. Just go to MaximumFun.org/JJHO or email Hodgman at MaximumFun.org.
I'm ready to judge you on the road. Take that, Jack Kerouac, author of On the Road.